you guys. Happy Sunday.
I'm looking back there, and she's then, tearing shit up. What, just out of the blue, you start tearing shit up, huh?
She was doing that earlier today, and because she was destroying everything, I started singing at her Anarchy in the Pooh-kay.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
I was like, oh, that was a new one. I hadn't thought of that one before.
Yeah.
Because I have a thing where I sing Pooh-kay songs, but I always, like, change one of the words to her name.
Yeah.
So, and I guess she likes it. She doesn't run away or yell at me, so.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Okay, so we're going to do Gator. This is the sequel to White Lightning. We did the White Lightning. I just got back from Biker Bar.
Yeah.
So I only had a couple drinks.
So he's all in the redneck headspace.
I'm in redneck
now.
Yeah.
Well, you're always kind of in a redneck headspace.
Yeah, all kinds of. They had all kinds of cars and motorcycles up there today. It's Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why we're late coming on.
Yeah.
Maybe we should probably push the matinee just generally on Sunday till 5, just so we can have, like, longer. Because sometimes we're out doing stuff on weekends. Yeah.
5 or 6.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that would probably be fine. I mean, we can still do it at 3 o'clock on Mondays and Tuesdays, but...
Yeah.
Or unless you just want to move everything to 5 p.m. across the board. I don't know how
that
you guys feel
about
that. That
makes more sense to me.
Because then everybody would remember.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it would be easier.
Look, she's going to tear it up again. What are you tearing shit up for?
Destroy.
And she's looking at me like, what? What? What?
Anarchy in the Pooh-kay, I told you.
Okay, so I don't know if you guys watched White Lightning, you know, on our recommendation on that last one, but I really enjoyed White Lightning. Jenny seemed to like it. It's got good comments on the YouTube show. The YouTube has it up for free with commercials. It's got this one up for free too on YouTube.
Yeah, somebody just said the movie Gator showed up on my YouTube feed free with ads. Yeah, so you can actually watch this free with ads. Although the weird thing is that we watched it on YouTube and we didn't get any ads.
No ads. It just would freeze.
Every now and then it would freeze, and I'm like, do you have like an ad blocker or something that's like not? And he says he doesn't. So, because we watched it on our big TV on the Xbox.
Yeah, and it's a direct sequel to White Lightning. And this was directed by Bert himself.
This was his directorial debut.
Yeah. The Gator, it's not a trilogy, it's just two of them. The Gator series was by Southerners, for Southerners, and about Southerners. Fucking, and all kinds of shit. All kinds of shit's included in this one. Jewish guys from New York show up. More black people. All the shit's resolved by fucking
more black
Gator.
People.
Yeah, more black people.
Also, there's a cat lady.
There's a cat lady.
Who's played by the same woman. I can't remember the actress's name, but that same woman that played the shop teacher in Grease.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's that actress's name? I can't remember, but she's in it.
Yeah.
And playing a crazy cat lady.
This one is actually, the budget is bigger than White Lightning. It seems to be bigger. It's kind of filmed a little bit better in certain ways. It's not quite as fucking raw. There's something about the first one was kind of like Mad Max-ish. In this one, Gator's a little more, seems to be kind of like a little more refined or a little more civilized. I mean, it's supposed to be 3 years later, I think.
Or, okay, here's one thing, though, because I'm kind of concerned about the time, or confused about the timeline.
Yeah.
In the original movie, White Lightning, did they mention that Gator McCluskey had a daughter?
No.
Okay, so in
so it
this one,
have been 3 years.
That's what I'm saying. He has a daughter in this one,
and she's,
and she's like, I was gonna say like 11 or 12.
Yeah,
she's like older.
Yeah.
And so I'm assuming that even though there were only 3 years between the movies, maybe it was supposed to be a bigger time jump.
Must have been.
I'm not really entirely sure.
Right, and it does look like the South had developed quite a bit. Maybe the dates are wrong, because it looks like the '60s almost in White Lightning, but then in this one it looks more like late '70s. It isn't though. It's 76.
76.
77.
This came. Okay. 76. This came out.
Okay.
You know what's hilarious is that Burt Reynolds, like a lot of actors, I guess, you know, he'd been in a bunch of movies at this point, and he, you know, of course, they all, like, what I really want to do is direct, and what he wanted to do was direct. Now, this was the first script that he was offered to direct. When he first read the script, like, to be in it, because they were like, hey, we're making a sequel to White Lightning, here's the script. And he's like, when I first read it, I'm like, this is a terrible script. And then they said, oh, but you can direct it. And he's like, oh my God, this is the best script ever. So the fact that he would, like, they let him, and he went on to do other, and actually he said that he actually liked directing a lot better than acting. Yeah. But he's like, he got so busy with acting because of the success of this movie and others that he didn't really have a lot of time. But he did go, he directed Sharky's Machine, which I didn't realize, and Stick, and a couple, like, several other ones. So, but this was his first one that he did. He did a pretty good job. I'm not, it's hard because White Lightning was, like you said, more like a Southern, like an action movie. There was like lots of car chases and there was that. Yeah. And this one, it has like a boat chase at the beginning, which is very similar to the stuff that you saw in White Lightning. And it has a couple other car chases in there. This one, I would call it more of a crime thriller slash romance.
Yeah.
And, sort of.
And kind of like some social commentary.
Yeah, kind
of. Because, all right, well, a lot of stuff happens in, like, Gator's next mission. He sees a lot of shit he doesn't approve of, you know, of something that the, what the Southern mob is doing. A lot of people might not know, but there was a big Southern mob. Some of it directly tied to the Italian mobs from New York. You see, when New York got a little too heavy in the 60s and the 70s for some of those gangsters, they would run to New Orleans. And they kind of took over New Orleans and some of the other little cities there and started new crime syndicates. There was a movie called Bullet to the Head by Sylvester Stallone. It was kind of recent. And he plays a mob hitman in New Orleans, and which is kind of on that same subject. But there was a Southern mafia that kind of came out of all that, and this movie is kind of about that. Guy from the from the Justice Department in New York comes down, and they're doing an investigation. One of the local mayors is running an organized crime syndicate, and I don't remember exactly how it happened. They wanted Gator to go in there and investigate it. Do you remember how that
happened? Because, and this one, because I kind of feel like in the first one, the feds, like, let him out of prison to go because his family was in moonshining and stuff.
Yeah.
This one, he had just got out of prison again, like, for another moonshining charge. So he was out legitimately. They wanted him to infiltrate the operation because the boss of it, Bama McCall, was an old friend of his.
Okay.
So he would be able to get into the guy's organization without him being suspicious. Yeah. So it's similar to the first story where, you know, he's using his connections in the criminal underworld to, you know, endear himself to these, to get dirt on them is what he's trying
to do. So there's a whole bunch of Southern slash New York jokes on this New York guy, you know what I mean? And fucking the mayor fucking meets him and it was just fucking funny, you know what I mean? It was just kind of showing how everybody was stereotyped each other back then. He meets the guy from the Justice Department. He goes, "Oh, yeah. I saw Fiddler on the Roof 3 times. And the guy's like, "What?"
He's like, just because I'm Jewish,
we've all seen... Oh, yeah, I saw Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah, I'm Jewish, so it's the law that we all have to watched Fiddler on the Roof.
Tries to suck up to him and... But there's a lot of good humor in it. Shit you couldn't get away with today, probably. I don't know. You probably could.
Yeah, depending on
the
movie.
And then fucking Gator finally, he gets a job in there. And this time I was right. See, the dude from fucking Smoking the Bandit,
Jerry Reed was in
this. Jerry Reed is in this. And he plays...
He wasn't in the first one.
Wasn't in the first one. I thought that was him, but it wasn't.
No.
Jerry Reed's in this one. He does a fucking great job. I can't believe that dude.
He's playing a villain.
Playing a villain.
Which he doesn't usually. Right. And him and Burt Reynolds did, I mean, most famously they did Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah.
I think they did another movie together called WW and the Dixie Dance Kings, I want to say.
Yeah.
And I think that Jerry Reed played a good guy because he's so affable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
An intimidating villain.
But in this one, he plays like a really bad dude. I mean, even though he still has that
funny,
like charming Southern kind of thing, but he's like a total sleazebag.
Yeah, he's pimping out 15-year-old girls and shit, and doesn't. And then he
giving them drugs and like raping them and stuff. Yeah, it's great.
And so, and then he's got Gator going out shaking down poor black businesses for fucking protection money and shit like that. And Gator's like, fucking, he's having a hard time dealing with it. He doesn't want to do it. But it's part of his mission, you know what I mean? He's got to infiltrate this.
So he's really conflicted about it because he's like, this is, I'm assuming, I don't think they go too much into it, but Bama was like an old friend of his, and I guess they haven't seen each other in a long time, so, you know, he goes up there, and then I think that when he sees the extent to which, you know, because Burt Reynolds' character, Gator, is kind of like, I don't mind a little criminality, you know what I mean? Obviously, because he's doing moonshine and all that, but... The extent that Bama's racket has gone to, where, like you said, they're essentially pimping out, they're drugging and pimping out, like, teenage girls.
Yeah.
You know, among other things. And like you said, shaking
from
down.
From good families.
Right.
And like, and it's implied that, hey, these are girls from
And shaking
families.
Down, like, these, you know, like, in the poor black areas, like, the business owners shaking them down for money and shit like that. And, you know, and he's having a hard time, like, going along with it, even, like, pretending to go along with it, you know?
And then they had to shake down the black gangsters, too. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And they got into a chase-slash-gunfight, but at the end, nobody killed each other. It was, like, part of the game. They're like, okay, I give you the money, you know, because they were... it didn't really explain it, why. It was just, it was something that had been going on between... him and that gang for a long time, this big cat and mouse game. But in the end, they just decided to pay. There was some kind of, I don't think they could kill each other. There was some kind of a symbiotic relationship that they somehow needed each other to run these criminal empires that they were doing. Probably supplying each other with stuff. They couldn't survive without each other or something. Don't you remember that scene?
Yeah.
When they got him? But I have to go back and see it again. I forgot the details of why they weren't killing each other. Maybe it was just...
Maybe it was just like, too, it was like mutually assured destruction type situation where it's just kind of like, well, we can't do that because then it'll like
then
spark off this big, huge fucking, you know, and
like
nobody
that.
Wants to do that.
Yeah, that was a pretty fun scene.
Granther says Bama McCall, classic. You know what's funny? I was watching like a little mini documentary about this movie. And because I was wondering about that, too. I just assumed he was called Bama because he was from Alabama.
Yeah.
But they said, no, actually, when Burt Reynolds and Jerry Reed were talking about the character... Burt Reynolds apparently says to Jerry Reed, who was like the meanest kid in your high school or in your school? And he said it was this kid named Bama McCall. So it was, he was named after a real person or like the most badass kid in your school or whatever. So they named it after a real person. That's that's how the story goes.
I like this one though. It was kind of in a way a better portrayal of the South. Just, it wasn't all shot in the junkiest of places. It showed that, no, they were real nice places too. Real upscale plate locations in the South. Real nice hotels, real shitty hotels. You had real fucking shitty fucking black neighborhoods and then really cool fucking black clubs that were like high end. That's where that one thing happened. There's a good scene where they go in there to shake them down. That's where they ran into the black gangsters. And fucking they had some fucking black, hot black stripper chick up there dancing, and fucking the gangster asked fucking gangster, so would you do it? And he's like, oh, in a New York minute. And then he said, New York minute, something like that, or New York second, or some shit like that.
New York minute.
New York minute, is that what he said?
Well, yeah, that's a pretty common,
I didn't know.
That's
never,
a pretty common.
Never even heard of it.
Yeah, that's okay. A very common aphorism.
Okay. So, anyway, and then they went into that chase. It was just kind of good because it showed more of the South. It was kind of a wider spectrum of it. A lot of it looked like South Florida, Northern Florida, Panhandle, and Central Florida.
Well, I think it was supposed to be Georgia, but the thing about it was that I'm not entirely sure where they shot
it. Trees?
But, it might have been very, very South Georgia because they talked about... you know, in the theme song, which the ballad of Gator McCluskey, which Jerry Reed also sings, and I was just like, man, I want like some country singer to like sing some ballad about my life. That'd be pretty rad. It'd be boring, but it'd be funny. But he's talking about he was supposed to live like with his dad and his daughter in the Okefenokee Swamp. Now, the Okefenokee Swamp, if you don't know, is right on the border of Florida and Georgia.
Okay.
So, but some of the later scenes are coastal. And it looked like North Florida or perhaps very South Georgia. So I think this is somewhere around the Florida-Georgia border
It makes sense because Burt Reynolds is from Georgia.
Yeah.
His family's from Georgia. Even though he was born in Michigan, his family was stationed there when his dad was in the Army. And he was only there when he was a baby, and then he moved back to Georgia. So he's directing, so he's probably going to put it where he's from, or in that area where he's from. That's where he's gonna film it. That's probably, you're probably right. It's probably right up there on the border of Georgia and Florida. Makes sense.
I was thinking too that Jerry Reed's character, Bama McCall, also has two henchmen.
Yeah.
One of which is named Bones, who is this big giant, like 7'5" dude. Who, some of that is, it's weird because they call this a comedy. It has, I don't know if I'd call it a comedy. It has funny shit in it, but it's not like a laugh a minute. And honestly, some of the shit in it is like kind of disturbing. Like, especially the one scene where Bama has just like apparently had sex with a drugged up 15-year-old and then kind of leaves her to like Burt Reynolds, like, oh, hey, enjoy yourself. Bye.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know, Burt Reynolds, who has a daughter, like a not much different age than that, is just kind of like, this is fucked up. And it's just like, you know what I mean?
He doesn't do it.
Yeah. Well, obviously.
Yeah.
Because he's a good guy. If he did do it, he wouldn't be the good guy anymore. Right. But so there's that. So it's tonally, it's kind of strange. Because like I said, I don't think I would call it a comedy. But Bones, this big, huge henchman, is so tall, the joke goes, that when he's driving the car, his head, like his head and shoulders, like stick out of the
sunroof. Yeah.
So there's that. And also, he has this other henchman called Smiley.
Yeah.
Who is like, he's like a predatory homosexual type character.
Yeah.
Like, and all he does is smile, and he has like these big fucking teeth like this.
Yeah, there's some pretty good scenes where he gets up on fucking, gets up on Gator and goes, so you were in prison. He's like, oh, yeah. He's like, I heard there's a lot of homosexuals in prison. He's like, yeah. And he gets creepier and creepier trying to make a move on him, get him to crack, and he's trying to fucking pretend like he's not affected. It's a good one. Started fucking skeeving out on him.
Yeah.
And then it's a good flick. It's got a lot of they go to a lot of locations. It's got a lot of interesting characters. A lot of cool interaction. Some people in there are giving quotes. You know, yeah, heard you hired some new bouncers. Bounce one of them off the wall, and bounce another one through a glass window. Yeah, there's good quotes in it.
I did laugh at that very hard.
and then Gator meets this news reporter.
Yeah, I was just gonna say this was actually, I don't know if this was Lauren Hutton's first movie, but it was her first major role for sure. Because she'd been a model prior to this.
Yes, so they start falling in love with each other. They're totally different. He's of course, you know, real redneck, you know, and she's from the South, but she's middle class. You see, that's another thing I liked about the movie. They showed the South's class system. People that lived in towns in a suburban setting were pretty much like anyone else anywhere else in the United States. They were Southerners, but their thinking was very middle class and very conventional. The country people were wild, and there was a lot of shit that was going on, and that showed. And then the aristocracy sometimes tended to be fucking corrupt, which it showed that also. And the government was very corrupt. Local governments tended to be. It depended on where you were. But I just like the fact that they show that there's not one kind of person in the South. There's a bunch of them.
Well, the thing that I really liked about this one is that Burt Reynolds' character in it, you know, he's kind of like a redneck and stuff in White Lightning, but he was still like a likable, you know, he wasn't stupid or not the, like any of the other like stereotypes.
He had more of an ex-con flavor to him in White Lightning.
This one, he seemed like a lot more, like he'd grown a lot
chilled
more,
out.
Like chilled out, matured a lot more.
Yeah.
And I liked the relationship that they established between him and Lauren Hutton because she was this came out in 1976, so she was very much career woman, you know, she was trying to get ahead in her profession, and she was very feminist, and he was, like, okay with that, and, like, there wasn't even really a lot of, like, back and forth about it. They were just kind of, like, immediately sort of, like, saw each other as equals, even though they were different. I also kind of like, too, at the end, can I spoil the end, like, the end of the love story?
Yeah.
And at the end, she gets, like, this big promotion, or she gets a job at CBS, like to go national, and she wants to like move to the big city, because she says early on, she's like, look, I don't want to live in a fucking backwater swamp, okay? And you can't really like blame her. She's, like I said, a career woman. And you know, they do love each other, like they fall in love, but you know, she's like, At the end, they kind of like say, well, we can't really be together because he wants to stay in the swamp and she doesn't want to.
Yeah.
And he's just kind of like, you know, and he just like lets her go and he's like cool about it. And they're, you know, they're sad, but.
Yeah, I tried to straighten it out. In the beginning of the movie, they show him and his daughter and his dad. And they're living on a swamp.
Yeah, it's in a swamp in the Okefenokee.
And it's never really clear if that was the fishing camp or if they were actually living in there. I think it was the fishing camp. A lot of Southerners in the country have multiple kind of little houses. One of them is the main house that they live in. They go to work from that one. That's the one they live in. But then they have like a cabin or a hunting cabin or a hunting lodge or a fishing lodge on a body of water somewhere in the boats down there because land isn't that expensive, and a lot of times two or three guys will go together on a single little fishing cabin and get it together, and you know they rotate through it. You know they're not all using it at the same time. It's, you know, chances of them all being there at once pretty slim. It doesn't matter, they're all going fishing anyway. So they showed some pretty cool swamp boat fights. That's the way you want to put it. They're running through people's down swamp houses and shit, and the daughter's there. Find out that the daughter, she doesn't want to go to school. I don't think she's ever been to school, huh? And he says, no, you're going to school. And she's like, no, I'm not going to school.
She's like, ah, fuck that. She doesn't say that, but...
Yeah, but basically she's like, nah.
Well, and the thing about it, and I think I forgot to mention this, is that that's kind of how they, you know, convince Gator to go along with this mission that they're doing, is they basically say, you go along with it, or we're going to arrest your dad.
That's right.
And put your daughter in foster care.
That's right, yeah. That's what it was. That's,
you know,
what,
so, yeah, because, in it for that's right, because, they, like, at first, he was just like, no, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And they, like I said, they only got him into it because he had been acquainted with Bama McCall like a long time ago. And so they thought, oh, okay, well, you go see him like he's your old friend. And you can like infiltrate his organization and see what the fuck is going on. Because again, they were trying to get dirt on somebody, which is where the cat lady comes into it. The cat lady, or shop teacher from Greece, she worked at the courthouse.
Stop it.
So she worked at the courthouse, so she had access to like a lot of records that, you know, were incriminating, and she still had keys. There was this one kind of long sequence where they go on this kind of like hijink filled adventure of them trying to like break into the courthouse after hours to like get these papers. And she insists on bringing her two cats with her because they're her babies. So the two cats have to come with them on the mission. And sadly, the cats...
cats die and she died too.
I think the cats don't make it.
No, the cats died, yeah.
They don't show... I mean, they don't die on the mission, but afterward, like, they go to this other beach house because they get made, and then they're like, oh, shit, we gotta go hide somewhere. So they go to this beach house that belongs to, like, Lauren Hutton's uncle or some shit. So they're out there, but then, like, the gangsters find them and burn the house down. And she runs back in to get the cats, which, you know, I can't blame her. I would do that too. But she gets killed. So presumably the cats get killed too, unless they jumped out a fucking window or something. So I just have to tell everybody, because maybe people get upset with that too. Like, when something bad happens to an animal in the movie, I just have to, like, warn people. You don't see it or anything, but the implication is that the cats don't make it. And the cat lady doesn't make it either. But yeah, so that's what I mean. I liked this. I'm not sure which one I liked better, because this one, there was a lot more shit in this one than I liked, but it was a little uneven. Like, it was tonally a little bit uneven. It was less like an action, like a Southern action movie, and more like a crime thriller love story with some funny stuff in it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That said, though, I don't know. I liked the story in this one better, I think.
Yeah.
Because I liked all the gangster shit, and I really liked seeing Jerry Reed playing a complete scumbag, because I think that was the first time I'd ever seen
them. They're both good, but they're both different. It's kind of like comparing Mad Max and Road Warrior. Road Warrior's better, but Mad Max is fucking good, too.
They're both, yeah.
It's the same thing. This movie, I think, is a little more, it's a little better than White Lightning. But White Lightning's nothing to laugh at either. That's something you'd want to see. You want to see them both. They're just different. They're offering different things with the same characters. It's the same spirit in the movie.
Yeah.
You know,
This one is more ambitious, I think. You know what
bigger
I mean?
Bigger budget.
In the sense of it having, like, a larger, like, more convoluted story, I guess.
The only thing I can knock it on is that after the scene with the underage prostitution, it was pretty dark right there.
Yeah.
I had to lighten it up real quick. That's what they did. They decided to lighten it up real quick with these romance scenes. And it didn't quite flow that way.
That's what I meant, like, for it being, like, a little bit tonally uneven.
Kind of went uneven. There should have been some more stuff that happened in between those scenes.
Yeah, because being, like, you know, teenage drugged prostitution, that's going a little dark. And then the next one to have kind of like a goofy, hey, look at my boobie. I don't think that was the next,
and
like,
they never
hey, look at my boobie scene.
Resolved that. He never got
They never
out
did,
of that.
Did they? Nope. And I think I, when we were watching that,
you I think he'd gone back and saved her.
Yeah, I was thinking that at the end. I was like, holy shit, I don't think they ever, like, addressed. I mean, because that's the thing. Like, you assume, yes, you know, Bama McCall was defeated in the end, or presumably arrested or whatever the hell. But
what happened to her?
But what happened to her? Like, did his next in command just take over and, like, nothing changed or whatever? Can we also talk about that one scene toward the end where that car goes off that sort of, like, ramp thing, like, onto the beach?
Yeah.
And the
good stunt.
That was, I believe that was Hal Needham, who was the same guy that, he's the stunt coordinator. He was the stunt coordinator on Smokey and the Bandit as well. And I think that was him, because I think he was doubling Burt Reynolds in that, and he almost got killed.
Yeah.
And if you watch that stunt, because I was like watching that going, holy fucking shit, is that guy okay?
It's right out of Mad Max, actually, better than some of the Mad Max stuff. This car ramps through the air, and there's a dude on the side of the car holding onto it. But he jumps out of the damn driver's side. And he's holding on to the fucking driver's side with the door, and the car hits the ground with him hanging on to the side of the car.
And then he's just like falls a long way.
Hits the damn sand.
The car easily could have fallen on him. I mean, it was like it looked like it was like inches.
Yeah.
And I was like I said, I was watching something earlier, like kind of about the making of this, and Burt Reynolds, I think, did say something about, it was like that car was fucking inches from hitting him. And then, like, they went up to him after and were like, holy shit, are you all right? And he's like, did you get it? Was it good? You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like that, because I was even impressed by that fucking stunt. I was like, that looked like it really could have gone wrong.
A lot of good Southern mafia shotgun fucking assassinations and blasts on people. Some pretty good action there. A couple of gunfights. It was a satisfying movie. It was pretty good. Pretty good.
Adriana says, was Burt Reynolds like a Southern American Bond type back in the day? Yeah, I guess so.
Kind of.
Not more kind of like down to earth, I guess.
James Bond, if he was Southern, would be a dude coming out of jail, down to earth.
Probably.
He would be a redneck.
He's just kind of he's almost kind of like a laid back.
Anything else would stand out in the South.
Yeah.
He would be like that.
Because he's like laid back and kind of funny and kind of and real charming.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's similar.
Kind of uncivilized to a certain extent.
Yeah, kind of, but not that bad. I mean, it's not, you know.
In one scene of the movie, he tells the news reporter girl, you know, they're laying together, and he goes, I guess I don't have any style. He says, I should have been born 100 years ago back when not having a style was a style. And she goes, no, you got style. You got all kinds of style. And he goes, well, you know, because he was saying that she had style.
Yeah, because she was like a big city girl.
Right, yeah. She goes, you got style. You got all kinds of style. And he's like, oh, okay.
You don't get to
He's
see-
got a mustache in this one. He didn't have a mustache in White Lightning.
That's true. I'm just not used to seeing him without a mustache. Yeah. His mustache is like its own separate entity.
Yeah.
It probably tells him things. But
It tells him things, But this movie was good enough to see why Smokey and the Bandit had them both in it, because they fucking did some good acting in this.
Although I have to say, some of the scenes are just kind of like the two of them like cracking up at each other, kind of wonder if they just kind of were like doing that and they just left it in.
There's a lot of long scenes where of them fucking with each other. It's kind of like something Quentin Tarantino probably ripped off. Like one time he wants to leave the mob, so they secretly slip him a Mickey in his drink, and he starts.
That's the scene I was thinking of.
Getting drugged. And they keep fucking with him and making fun of him while he's going out. And says, you're going to be all right. You're just going to go to sleep, and I'm going to put you in the back of the car. When you wake up, you're going to be in your car outside of town. And, you know, he says, but I can't, you know. and all kinds of I'm you know, and he's like, I'm gonna, it just, you just gotta see the scene. It's pretty good. You don't know whether or not they're gonna kill him or if they're really gonna let him go, but they do let him go.
Well, for a time, until he comes, he's like, fuck this, and he comes back and tries to fuck with them again. And then they're like, okay, I guess we have to kill him now.
Yeah.
But,
they did let him go, though.
Well, at first they did, yeah. But, you know, after the end, I was just kind of like...
Yeah.
Because I think they found out after that he was working for...
But it's, they're both free. I recommend the series. It's good. It's a good series. If you're not American and you fucking want to see the Old South, it was a South that, well, it's not really the Old South. It was like, the Old South was back in the 1800s. But, you know, this was kind of the South that I grew up in as a kid, visited my dad during the summers. You know, this is the South that my dad came from. And it's accurate. That's the way most
people. Well, and I remember a lot of this stuff, too, from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the way shit was.
And the attitude. When I was younger. And the people, the way they looked, the way they talked, that's pretty much it. They even had some hippies in it. They had those.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just were rare. They talked about... Actually, that was in the first movie.
That was the first one. I was going to... Yeah, because I was sitting there trying to remember, were there hippies in this one? I don't remember. No, yeah, I kind of feel like the first one had hippies in it.
First one had hippies in it,
yeah. But this one didn't have any hippies. This was kind of more...
The hippie thing had gone away.
Yeah, this was like late... This was 76. Yeah. So I think hippies...
This is more the... More... some of it happens in kind of middle class towns, and then gangsters in nightclubs.
Yeah, because I kind of feel like the first one was almost all like in the swamp or in like really really lower income neighborhoods, you know, among like clicking with moonshiners and stuff. Whereas this one is kind of like across the board,
a little more exciting, I think, fucking visually, you see more.
Yeah,
And most of the things that you're seeing in this are gone. They're torn down. Nothing looks like.
Well, yeah,
that
this
anymore.
Was a long time ago.
But the old corner stores, the old little package stores, and the old little strip malls—they're all torn down. They're all gone. Even the roads don't look like that anymore. They all have fucking gutters and sidewalks and shit. It's just in most, you have to go out of town. They don't have them, but in towns they do. It looks. Nowadays, a lot of the South just looks very much, at least here in Florida, looks very much like a Disney theme park. Manicured stuff.
Well, and I kind of feel like suburban areas kind of look similar everywhere in the country.
Now. Yeah.
You know, because I've seen, you know, shit from like suburbs all over the U.S. and they look very, very similar. Yeah. I mean, other than like different kind of trees and shit like
that.
To
get into the world that they're talking about in the Gator series... You got to go out that way, about another 5-10 miles, and you'll start to see that kind of stuff. And the further you go, it's weird because the farms sometimes will get bigger and richer, and you have rich people out there. But they're country people that they got cattle and all kinds of stuff. You know, there's fucking cows. Right? There's 200 head of cows just a couple hundred meters away from here.
Yeah, we could walk to it.
Yeah. And you have rednecks and shit, and you just see some weird shit. Like, you know, you'll see a fucking... Nice house, brand new. It's up on stilts off the ground. Fucking have about 7 or 8 cars parked underneath there and a whole bunch of Harley Davidsons, and it's just like expensive shit. And you're like, what does that dude do for a living? I don't know. And then you go a little bit further and you'll be like, there'll be like 2 or 3 trailers hidden behind a bunch of bushes and you can't really see. And there's a brand new fucking Corvette parked there and fucking nice shit. You know, it's not all just these jalopies. They like shit like Corvettes and the new Camaro. And sometimes not the entry models. We're talking about the high-performance editions of the Camaros. You know, they don't mind fucking financing a fucking badass muscle car. Not in the redneck South. And going to see where her parents live and shit, you go under there and it's damn American flags, Trump flags, and fucking Confederate fucking battle flags all down there. Remember that? It's just fucking... They'll fly all those fucking flags. And, I stopped at the liquor store and went in there and fucking... I forgot how big those fuckers are. They were like... There must have been 20 people waiting in line to pay for gas fucking... Most of them over 6 feet tall. I felt like a fucking midget. The dudes are fucking big. Harleys everywhere. It's just... It's a lot bigger scale. It's upscale now. In Gator's time, it's very low income. But it's funny because they're kind of low income, a lot of them. But they just have really nice shit. They just got good credit, I guess.
John Smith says, watching those stunts from back in the day, you knew lives were on the line, especially in the silent era.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they didn't have, like, all the safeguards and shit that they have nowadays. You know, they're like, hey, stand over there and we'll shoot at you. We'll try not to hit you. Just, you know, don't worry about it. Fourth Throwdown says, Hal Needham also directed Hooper. I remember that movie. In which Burt Reynolds actually plays a stuntman. Yeah, honestly, this was one of the, this was one of the most harrowing, like, stunts that I've seen. Like, that dude just coming off the car like that. Because it looked like... I mean, it really looked like something could have gone horribly, horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Slasher Fred says, I wonder if Burt Reynolds had ever been mistaken for Dennis Weaver from Duel. Yeah, because they did look the same. I feel like the Burt Reynolds look, that was a look in the 70s.
It was a look, right.
That was a whole, you had that real bushy mustache, you had the kind of the dark hat, hair, the cowboy hat, yeah.
Tight jeans or tight pants, and then fucking look like you, maybe like a work belt around you. It's just something like that. You look like you were there to fix somebody's telephone or something. Fucking put up telephone lines.
Which I feel, Burt Reynolds is kind of like the platonic ideal of that.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just like the best looking dude that looks like, that he came over to like fix your telephone lines.
Yeah.
He's like Wichita lineman or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Now, we saw a movie last night. It was great. It's also free on YouTube. I'm going to plug it now so you guys can watch it while it's still free.
And we're gonna talk about it tomorrow on the matinee tomorrow.
It's called The Machinist.
No, The Mechanic.
Mechanic. I got him confused. The Mechanic with
Charles Bronson.
Charles Bronson and the fucking dude from Airwolf. What was his name? Jan Michael Vincent. Wasn't that Jan Michael Vincent?
Jan Michael, yeah.
Yeah, Jan Michael Vincent.
Was he on Miami Vice?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think he was in Miami Vice. I think he was in Airwolf, wasn't he?
Or he was one of those.
No, wasn't he in the A-Team?
Yeah. Now I can't remember. I knew he was in something from the 70s, but I can't remember what it was.
Anyway, The Mechanic was about a dude who played by Bronson, who's a professional hitman and assassin. He's real good. He's weird. He's kind of like a serial killer. Got a weird bad upbringing and kind of autistic a little bit around people. And Jenny didn't catch it. I caught a fucking huge gay undertone.
Well, I'm not saying I didn't catch it. I just don't know if it was necessarily like that. I'm
pretty
was
sure.
Relevant to the plot. It might have been.
The way they were shooting stuff with dudes' crotches and shit and fucking when the eye contact, the lingering eye contact, I think they were trying to say that they were in love with each other. That's how I picked that up, that sex was happening. Man, that dude walked in, fucking Jan Michael Vincent walked in, and fucking it zooms in on his face, and it zooms in, then the eye contact between him, and then he plays it off. Like, yeah. Yeah, they were trying to say that, there was some homosexuality going on.
Or I mean, there could have been, but like I said, it doesn't, like, factor into the plot in any way.
I think it did, though. Because remember how it ended? It was supposed to be like a real tight relationship, but then they broke up, I guess you could say. And then...
I guess you could call it that.
I think that... I think that element was supposed to be in there, and it wouldn't surprise me if it was edited out.
I don't know. Well, like I said, we're not doing that movie till tomorrow.
We're going to do it tomorrow.
So save it, and then I'll do some research about it and see what's going on.
I just hype-plugged that motherfucker.
I know, but don't, like...
That bitch is badass.
Don't blow your whole load on it. It's a good movie, though.
It's a very good movie. It was weird. It's a weird 70s
It's Michael Winner. I'd seen some other Michael Winner movies. I thought I saw that one, too, but I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
Let me see.
There's another one on there. It's called Mr. Majestic. I'm going to see that one, too.
That one's good. I remember that one.
Charles Bronson.
Weirdly, like I said, this is what happens when you have an ex-husband that was super into like American action movies because he was British. So I saw every Chuck Norris movie and every Charles Bronson movie because he really liked those two. So I saw like a fuck ton of Charles Bronson movies. Mr. Majestic, 10 to Midnight, all that kind of stuff. 10 to Midnight is really good too. You would probably like that as well. I think that's on Amazon Prime for free now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
Slasher Fred says, Smokey and the Bandit kind of brings back the days of CB radio. Yeah, it's like, the weird thing is like, we watched that not too long ago and I thought we did a matinee on it, but I guess we didn't. Maybe we should do that at some point.
What's that?
Smokey and the Bandit.
I think we
talked about it on one of our sidetrack shows.
We
maybe.
Just saw it recently.
Yeah,
it's
but
a good
we
movie.
Yeah, we didn't do a matinee on it then.
I think it was up for free, wasn't it? No, we had to pay for it.
No, we paid for it. I think it was $3.99. I
also wanted to do Cannonball Run.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in a long time. You know, and there's sequels to Smokey and the Bandit. There's two sequels.
Yeah, and I remember the second one. I don't remember if I ever saw the third one. I'm sure I did, but I don't remember anything about it. Yeah, so we were talking about how Burt Reynolds was, like, the look of the 70s, and Oracle said kind of like how Tom Selleck was a look in the 80s. Yeah, you had, like, that type. You know what I mean?
Kevin Lear was telling me to set up a CB station. CB's out, dude. Everything now. The closest thing to CB would be GMRS. I have GMRS and I have ham capabilities. Right now, you want GMRS, although you want both. But GMRS is really good because you're only dealing with 22 channels and only a couple repeaters. And it channels everybody right into those 22 channels. You don't have millions of channels. You only got 22. So when you have the thing on scan, you're more likely to hear radio traffic. It's real good for in case cell phones or fucking EMPs or whatever. You know what I mean? You don't have a computer system and you can use ham repeaters and GMRS repeaters. Because even on my little $20 cheapos, my ham radios, I'm hooked. I got it programmed to talk to hit repeaters. I can hear people up in like Maine and Kansas talking. The thing is, they're not talking about much. They sign in all the same time around 10 o'clock in the morning, and they all fucking check in, and they just give the report of what the weather's like where they are. They start talking about weather, and then that's it. So that gets boring real quick, just talking about the weather. You know, it's just...
I don't know. The Brits have a whole culture.
They're just
going to
talk about the weather over there and talk about the weather here. So there's not really... They're not really... Then there's a bunch of government stuff that's constantly playing, but it's mostly about weather. Weather.
I mean, weather is, to be fair, like a big part of people's day-to-day lives, so...
And in an emergency, those weather channels start giving you all kinds of emergency information.
Hugo says, I don't understand why people get upset when animals die in movies, but they're okay with humans dying. I am one of those people. Yeah. I think it's because in life, as in movies, most humans are not all that likable. So I don't really care if they get killed.
Yeah.
Whereas kitties and doggies are, and bunnies, are little just innocent creatures. They don't know what's going on. Leave them alone.
Yeah.
And I think, too, there's, like, kind of a thing, too, particularly lately in horror movies, and I think I talk about it every time I do a movie where something like this happens. I think they're like, we're going to show you how fucked up this movie is by killing off, like, a cat or a dog. I'm like, please don't. But I guess they do it, like, to piss off people lately, I suppose. Like, kill all the people you want in the movies. Yeah. I don't care. But, like, leave the damn cats alone.
Yeah. Let me respond in there. Yeah, CB's dead because CB's a little small part inside the radio band. It's not popular anymore. If you want to get back into it, you can get little GMRS radios, General Mobile Radio Service, and you just pay for a license. You don't really need any, you know, courses or anything. Ham is a simple course, but you can pay for that, too. But here's the thing. In an emergency situation, anybody can use those without a license. And no one's ever been arrested or fined for not having a license. It's kind of dumb, you know. We don't live in the age of radio anymore. There's no problem with abundance of radio traffic. Most of the radio spectrum is fucking empty. So I don't really understand why you need any permission to use it. You need permission to use your own free radio band. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, John Smith says, I was really into listening to pirate radio back in the day. Yeah. Pump up the volume made it look a lot cooler than it was.
Yeah,
I mean, that was an awesome movie.
Right.
But, yeah, I do kind of feel like I don't really think they would care. Even back then, I don't really think they would care all that much at, like, some kid doing a pirate radio station.
Yeah, there's only, like, when it comes to the FCC fining people, there's only three or four instances of it, and it's usually somebody jamming somebody else's.
Yeah, it would have to be like a way bigger deal.
It's way
than just in the movie. I mean, basically, he was just like talking about the corruption at his high school and playing alternative music that had bad words in it. I don't think anyone would care.
There was one guy
who
was running a pirate music radio station. I think it was somewhere in L.A. They gave him a bunch of warnings over a period of about 10 years. Eventually, he wasn't broadcasting on very much power either, so he wasn't really broadcasting very far. They came and took all his radio shit. They didn't even find him. They just took all his shit. 2 months later, he bought new shit and started it again, and they didn't do anything to him. They just got sick of him.
Yeah, they're just like, whatever.
Yeah. So you just want to respect it. You know, you don't fucking jam up, you know, whatever channel or frequency you're on. Just, you should understand it and fucking know about call signs and radio etiquette if you're doing ham. GMRS, they're not fucking worried about it. There's another one, FRS, which is just like, that's kind of like CB now, where you don't need anything. You can just talk on it. Grampters knows what it is. I think it was FRS or MURS. I think that's also, that's just a little handheld $20 sets you could get, you can give to a kid, you know. Those are out there. But there's no real, there's nothing really important happening on those, in those bandwidths, you know.
Yeah, Grampter says he's a ham user, call sign KE8NON. Yeah. Most ham users are old dudes who ramble on about nothing in particular.
Yeah.
And then John Smith brings up the website doesthedogdie.com. I don't know if they have a cat equivalent or if they've already started, if they've started adding cats to that. But yeah, pretty much any movie that you can think of, every time a movie comes out, you can go to the website doesthedogdie.com and it will tell you if the dog dies and at what point the dog dies in case you don't want to watch it. So
yeah.
So it's, they're doing, it's a valuable service.
Yeah, FRS, Family Radio Service. Grandpa says the FCC can actually show up and demand to see your radio come. Yeah. That's true, but most of the guys that are out there, they have those little fucking UV5R Baofeng radios. They transmit 4.5 watts. You know, you can't really talk very far on it anyway, you know, not unless you can bang something off a repeater, and a lot of those guys aren't doing it. They're just talking to fucking Jed on the other side of the fucking, the other side of the thing, you know, trying
Jed.
To fucking coordinate the fucking sprinklers. That, is that Sector 3? Which sprinkler is that? You know, it's just, they're not really talking on it. They're just working on it. Using it as a tool, and then that's it. Nobody even hears it because you can put them on low and transmit it a 0.5 watt, and that won't go anywhere, you know. 0.5 mile max, if there isn't any obstructions. What's the chances of the FCC intercepting you within a 0.5 mile radius and fucking going, how dare you fuck with that thing while you're trying to work out the sprinkler system, you know?
Adriana says, did Crocodile Dundee try to imitate Gator for the Australian market? Well, I don't know if it's so much an imitation, but Australia and the United States have very similar cultural, you know, kind of context, I guess.
Sometimes, yeah.
So sometimes,
it's
so
cowboy based.
Yeah, so happens. I think there is kind of like this whole like you know, sort of outback, you know, kind of thing, just paralleling our old west type thing. Yeah. So I think they have the same kind of cultural archetypes.
That's a fish out of water stories. They've been making those forever, going back to Beverly Hillbillies.
That's true.
Which is a great TV series. You can see it for free on YouTube without commercials. Each one of them is only 15 minutes long without commercials. But they're just funny little quick.
Do you know that most of our entire childhood, you know, my brother would eat cereal out of this massive bowl and we called it the Jethro Bowl.
Jethro Bowl, yeah.
Jethro Bowl. Where's his Jethro Bowl? Yeah. He has to eat the fucking cereal.
Ellie Mae. That was part of the stereotypes of fucking country people being good looking was fucking Jethro Bodine shows up and fucking the damn fucking banker woman is just fucking head over heels for this fucking big old fucking hillbilly.
It's like, ooh, look at this big lunkhead. I'm into it.
Yeah, he'd come out fucking jumping in the damn. Let's go to Cement Pond. What was her name?
Into Cement Pond.
Into Cement Pond. And he's just all fucking, he's fucking shredded, you know. And then his sister comes running out. Well, actually, it was a cousin. Weren't they cousins? I don't think they were brother and sister.
I didn't think they were either.
I think Melly Mae was adopted.
I haven't seen it for a long time, so I don't remember. I don't remember what the relationship was between all of them.
Yeah, and Ellie Mae was just some kind of, she was the original Desi Duke. She was just this like blonde bombshell, you know. And didn't know she was good looking. You know, that was the funny thing about it.
All right. We've been going for like an hour almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Holy crap. So Gator, it's free on YouTube.
Yeah.
You don't have to have seen White Lightning. Because, I mean, but you should, I mean, if you want to see both. Yeah. But I'm just saying that you don't, like, it's not like you won't know what's going on.
No.
Type of thing.
But you don't see the character development arc.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of one of the most interesting things, is that it's clearly the same character, but he's matured a lot since the first one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, check them out. They're free to watch. And so, yeah, we'll be back tomorrow talking about that Charles Bronson movie that we mentioned, The Mechanic. Yeah.
The Mechanic. Go check that out.
So do you want to just go ahead, like I said, this is totally off, right, whatever, but you want to just go ahead and push all the matinees to 5?
Yeah.
Let's just make everything 5 p.m. Okay. Eastern Standard Time.
Okay.
instead of three, because I don't I don't know why we initially started doing that in the first place. Okay. I don't know why we do a lot of things.
Camp guy straightened me out. Jethro was Jed's nephew, so Jethro was the one that was Pearl's mom.
Okay.
His mother was Pearl. That's right.
See, I couldn't remember.
That's right. And Ellie Mae was actually Jed's daughter, I believe.
The camp guy said, "I don't know where Ellie Mae came from." she just showed up one day.
Well, that's right. She called him. She called him Uncle Jed, didn't she? She called him Uncle Jed. Didn't she call him Uncle Jed? No, he called her Uncle Jed.
I don't know.
It's been so long. It could be the Ellie Mae wasn't.
Maybe she got left when she was a baby. They left her on the porch and on the basket or something.
Right.
I don't know. But yeah, okay. So we'll be back tomorrow, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to talk about that Charles Bronson movie. So have a good rest of your weekend, everybody. And we will see you guys again tomorrow. Bye.